Today we're talking with Charlie Marsh about Rough, Astral, and UV. Mostly about UV, a tool that can be used in place of pip, pip tools, and virtualenv. Since it's written in Rust, it's really fast. This is kind of a theme with Charlie and Astral, using Rust to speed up the Python toolchain. If you only use pip or create virtual environments once in a while, it's probably not a big deal. But if you do it a lot, as I do, these speedups improve my day-to-day workflow. That reminds me of how PyCharm has tons of workflow optimizations that add up to significant time savings over the course of even a day or afternoon. Just one example. Highlight a word or function name or variable or something and hit Control-Shift-F for Find in Files. The thing I just highlighted is already in the search field. That's nice. And if the list is too much, there's a file mask filter right in the top of the dialog, so I can only look in the .py files or maybe my .md markdown files or whatever. If it's still too much, there's a button for project, module, or directory to limit the scope, and a scope button also that pops up more options, including recently changed files. That's so cool. There's tons of features like that, and PyCharm Pro has even more time-saving features to supercharge your productivity, like AI Assistant. AI help right in your editor. Very cool. Head to pythontest.com/PyCharm. You can use code PyTest to get 20% off Pro Edition, and the first 10 people this month get 1 month of AI Assistant for free. Thanks, PyCharm. Today on Python Test, I've got Charlie Marsh, and I asked him on to talk about UV, but I kind of want to talk about, actually, I don't even know if you pronounce UV, UV. So we'll start with that, and then a little bit about Rough and Astral. But so, Charlie, first off, like, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, UV is right. No, UV is right. Your first instinct was correct. Don't worry.
Okay. Let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
Rough isn't even that old. So tell me the short version of your life from conception of Rough to now.
Of course. Well, I started working on Rough in like the summer of 2022, I think. I mean, you can look back at the commit history, but I think I did the first release it was like a year and a half ago, maybe. And you know, at that point in time, I had most recently been working as a software engineer at a sort of computational biotech company, and I was in charge of broadly like our software infrastructure. So we had like a lot of Python code because we were doing scientific computing, and I'd just spent a lot of time with our tool chain, and that included like linters, formatters, type checkers, also like packaging tooling. And when I left that job, I had this sort of idea in my head for like, could we build much faster Python tooling by leveraging Rust, because this is something that I'd seen in like some other programming ecosystems. It was a trend that was happening like in the JavaScript ecosystem, for example. And I'd started to get exposed to Rust and the way that like Rust and Python could be used together at that job and over the course of some of the things we were doing. So Rough kind of started out as a way for me to test this hypothesis very concretely of like, could we build better Python tooling and what would it look like? And you know, the first version I released, it was pretty bare bones. Like, I think it supported, I should look back at some point, but I think it supported something like 20 rules. So it could parse Python source code. It could like traverse it. It could do things like find unused imports. So it could do like some analysis. But I was really focused on, am I convinced that like this won't get much slower, right? So like that you can build tools that do a lot of the same things but are much, much faster. That's the thing I wanted to prove out. I released it, I think maybe like August of 2022. It just grew really, really quickly. It turns out a lot of people cared about this, and that the idea of faster tooling and more performant Python tooling really resonated with them. So, you know, we had a couple big projects for very early adopters, like Pydantic and FastAPI and Zulip. So, you know, that kind of gave the project a lot of momentum. And from there, I was just like, I'm going to look at all the things that are preventing people from using this and just knock them out one by one. And we just kind of expanded the scope of the project, made it capable of doing more and more. And it's just continued to grow, you know, very rapidly over the course of the year.
Well, when I started looking at it, it was to me kind of like it did some of what Flake8 did, some of the Flake8 light. I mean, Flake8 with no plugins. But it was just like super fast. So I even liked it for that, but it's a lot more than that. It's so even on the front page, it says drop in parity for Flake8, iSort and Black, but that is just touching the surface, isn't it?
Yeah, we have like, I don't know, like somewhere between like 700, we have like over 700 rules. It can be used like often when we see people migrating, they're replacing like literally like 10 or 20 tools with Ruff. And it means they can get like, you know, like the sort of the flagship feature of Ruff that the reason that I started working on it was performance. But it turns out there are like a bunch of other things, some of which are intentional, some of which were sort of like accidental, that also made it very appealing to people. And one was the fact that we just bundle more things together. So you can kind of learn this one tool and put this one tool in your, you know, in your project, in your tool chain, instead of having to learn a bunch of disparate tools and figure out how to chain them together. So like the fact that instead of, you know, iSort's a great project, but the fact that instead of learning how to use iSort, you can just add the iSort rules to your Ruff configuration. For a lot of people, that simplification is really, really helpful. We've added a lot of things over time. We shipped support for formatting. So we have like a largely Black compatible formatter built in as Ruff format. We shipped in October, I think. So a couple months ago. That followed a lot of the same, you know, the same premise. It was like Black is a really amazing tool. It's like, it's enormously popular. We're not necessarily trying to innovate right now on like code style. What we're trying to do is build something that we think is like build something more performant and something that's kind of feels more unified for people. So instead of learning a linter and a formatter, they can use Ruff, and Ruff can be your linter and your formatter in a way that feels familiar.
So there's that, but how did that become a company?
So I started the company. The company is called Astral. And our goal is to build unified high performance Python tooling. So I announced the company like just before PyCon of last year, so like in April. Yeah. Part of what we want to do is just like bring more like energy and experimentation into like Python tooling. Even like bring in people who don't work on Python and like come convince them to come like build a lot of great Python tooling. Like those are all very intentional things for us. We've grown, you know, since then we've grown the team. We're like, I guess we're 8 people as of today. We work on and maintain obviously Ruff and now also UV. Our goal for the future is to, we want to keep building out this kind of unified tooling. So our dream is like you download this single binary that bootstraps and installs Python for you and then gives you like everything you need to be productive with Python. So UV is like some of the core packaging fundamentals of what that would be, like ways to install and manage dependencies. Ruff is kind of like the linter and the formatter. We want to kind of all bring that all together into like a cohesive experience. And from there, build and sell services on top of the tooling that just integrate with it really well. The kind of natural next thing you would need when working with Python and using our tooling already. So
while we're at it, build and sell extra tooling around it. I was going to ask, like, all this work so far is open source.
Yeah.
How are you guys making money?
Any money right now. Yeah. So we are what you would call pre-revenue. So we don't make any money. We're venture backed. So we have investors, right, who have invested money into the company in return for ownership stakes. The vision is to like build out this tooling and then use it as sort of like an entry point for people, and a way to build and sell software that just integrates with it really well. And like, you know, in that world, like all our stuff remains open source and free, and like no one has to pay for any of these things that we are doing. But, you know, the hope is that we can build services on top of the tooling. You know, I don't know if we'll actually do any of these, but examples would be like, oh, a custom, we can do like package hosting, like private registries for companies that already pay for those. And, you know, they host it on AWS or wherever else. We could build our own version of that, right? That's really well integrated with our package manager, for example. Or we could build like CI/CD solutions that are really well integrated with Ruff and with the other tools that we build. But the idea there would be like try to build things that really like just work if you're already using our tooling and integrate with them really well. So like the incentive structure we want to have is that we want to be incentivized to like grow, invest in, and build the open source in a very like holistic and genuine way, and have that translate to, you know, services for enterprise users of our tooling that just integrate really well with it.
Yeah, I can imagine, well, you didn't ask me, but I can imagine in the future a portion being a consulting wing to have, you know, a company says, this is what we're doing now. I don't care what it does, but can you make it faster?
That's possible too. Yeah. But that's kind of like the, you know, I don't have like, I'm very happy to like talk about like how the company works and stuff. Like I just don't talk about it very often because I think it's not necessarily what people are interested in. But like that's kind of like our goal, right? It's like we're using like our goal right now is to like build and invest in the open source. And then I think that creates really interesting opportunities for things that we can build on top of it for, you know, for enterprise users of the tooling.
Well, yeah, mostly partly I wanted to ask about this because I thought of a joke this morning. I was just curious if in your company, if you talk about your financial outlook, if those are astral projections.
Yeah, I do have a spreadsheet called Astral Projections. Yes.
You do?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the spreadsheet for our 2024 budget is called Astral Projections. Yeah. Yay. Thank you. I'm glad that you thought of that.
That's so bad.
I actually don't know if I ever told anyone that, even internally, but yeah, I do make that joke to myself.
Okay, good. Nice.
But we're good.
This is crazy. This is a year, like just your life is very different than a year and a half ago then.
Oh, it's extremely different. Yeah. And a year and a half ago, I mean, well, I also became a father. And so that was also really different. But like a year and a half ago, I mean, you know, like my whole career, you know, I've been a Python user for a very long time, or I don't know, I'm not that old, I guess, but you know, my whole career I've worked at companies that ran on Python. Like I was at Khan Academy. We were on like App Engine. It was like all Python. And then, you know, the company I was at most recently, it was also like the computational biotech company I was talking about before, that was also all Python. And so I've been like a Python user for a very long time, but I have not been a member of the community like at all. And I also haven't really been that involved in open source, right? Again, I've been a consumer of open source, but not really an active participant. And so like one of the biggest changes for me over the past year and a half has been like, I didn't know anyone in Python a year and a half ago. And I've had to really grow and learn, you know, obviously how to be a maintainer, because now we have these projects that, you know, thankfully have a lot of activity. And so it's been a little bit of a trial by fire to learn, you know, how to be a good maintainer or passable maintainer. And then the other is just learning, you know, meeting all the people in the Python ecosystem and learning, you know, how like the pet process works. And, you know, now I'm like actually expected to, you know, participate in peps and like my people want me to chime in on things on the Python discussion forums. And like, that's all very, very new to me. So it's just very different. Yeah. My life's very, very different from where it was, you know, a year and a half ago.
Well, head of a company, are you still coding?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot.
Okay.
Yeah. Which takes a lot of, I mean, I have like a lot of other responsibilities, right? Like, you know, foremost to like the people who work at the company, right? Making sure that like they're supported and, you know, that payroll works and that everything, you know, legal, all that kind of stuff. Like that's just a lot of responsibility, hiring, recruiting. But I sort of try and I guess I do some funny things with my schedule. Like I try and only do meetings really on like Tuesdays and Thursdays. And okay. then that creates a lot of space for like Wednesdays. We don't do any meetings. So I just try and like chunk lots of like heads down time. I don't know if I'll be able to code forever if we keep growing, unless I'm like really diligent about that being my priority. But right now, yeah, I try and have it be how I spend most of my time.
Okay. So let's jump into UV. So UV is what? It's PIP and PIP tools and virtual env.
Yep. Is that exactly? That's exactly okay. right. Yeah. And this is something that, we started talking about doing this, like really at PyCon. Like almost a year ago, we started talking about doing this, internally. Okay. It was just three of us at the time. And like, I knew that I wanted to do something like that. I thought packaging could be a really important part of what we're doing, because I just thought there were, it's an area where people, they feel frustration, or I see frustration. And I thought there were at least opportunities to do something different. So we started talking about this like almost a year ago, and we were like, to the amount of detail that we were like, maybe this is what the first release would be, this is what the second release would be, et cetera, et cetera. But The thing that happened was like Ruff just it just needed so much of our time. and we decided to do the formatter and such. So we only started working on this really in like October. It's meant to be effectively like a drop-in alternative for PIP tools, virtual env. So I wouldn't say it's, if people on the show are familiar with like poetry or PDM, like it's not quite at that level of abstraction right now. Like those tools come with like a pretty opinionated workflow, right? Where you're doing like poetry add, poetry lock, poetry sync. In my mind, PIP and PIP tools kind of sit at this lower level of control. Like when you use PIP, you're kind of doing these low level commands of like, add this thing, install this thing, remove this thing. And that's the level that we're starting at. So if you right now like use PIP a lot, or PIP tools or virtual env, like UV is really designed to be something that you could drop in and use in lieu of those. So it's, like Ruff, it's a single tool that tries to do multiple things so that you can focus on like learning that interface rather than chaining together a bunch of different tools. And also like Ruff, we designed the whole thing to be as fast as we could make it. So like performance was a really big focus from the start. A lot of the choices that we made were driven by how can we make these things 10 times faster than like the other things that exist out there right now. I feel pretty good about how that turned out. It's like really, really, really fast. There are some areas where it's not faster, and I have like some thoughts about like, directions we want to take things in the future to try and continue to change things and make them faster. But like, for example, like if you need to build like NumPy on your machine in order to install it, like that's going to be as slow with PIP, with UV, as it would be with PIP, because like we don't make like building NumPy faster. But
I didn't even know that happened. If I do a PIP install NumPy, it sometimes builds on the client's machine.
Sometimes. Okay. So it depends. So in Python, there's really two kinds of like artifacts, quote unquote, that are uploaded to PyPI. And so when you PIP and those are source distributions and build distributions. A build distribution in Python is typically called a wheel. So if you've ever seen the .whl or heard of a wheel, effectively what happens is as someone who like, let's say I am the NumPy maintainer, I'm not, but like imagine I was, when I upload my NumPy release to PyPI, I can also like pre-build it on a bunch of target architectures. So I could say, I'm going to build a version for Windows, for Mac, and for Linux, and I can upload those pre-built files to PyPI. And then if you are on Windows and you try to pip install NumPy, it'll look and see, did they already upload like a version that's built for my machine? And if there's a compatible version, it'll pull that and it doesn't have to build. If you're on a machine for which they didn't upload a compatible version, then your machine actually does have to build it, build it from source. So that's why sometimes when you pip install things, they might fail for what looks like, you were missing a native dependency, or, there's a lot of different reasons it could fail, but effectively, sometimes when you install things in Python, you have to build them yourself on your machine, and sometimes you don't. And if you have to build something yourself on your machine, it's hard to make that much faster, because that's basically something that's totally outside of the control of a tool like BIP for UV. So like, if you need to compile NumPy from source on your machine, like that's going to be the same speed. But we do a lot of fancy things to try and minimize that work, minimize the number of times that you have to build it.
Charlie, while you're at it, can you just go ahead and make GCC faster?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I think there's some interesting things we could think about doing there, but not make GCC faster, but like, how can we leverage built artifacts in more places?
When we covered this on Python Bytes, one commenter said that they were looking into what UV's doing, and one of the things that you're doing that's quite a bit different is it's a different approach to caching than
it's very different.
PIP,
yeah.
PIP uses. So can you describe that, or?
I can describe how our cache works for sure. I can't describe PIP's cache as well, but I think I can describe some of the things that I think we do that they don't. So basically the way to think about UV's cache is we kind of have like a global store of all the packages that you have installed on and in any of your projects. And if you install the same dependency in like two different projects, what we'll generally do is, instead of like re-downloading that thing and like copying it into your virtual environment in like the two different projects, we put the package in one place. And then we use various forms of like symlinking this thing called copy on write, which is a little different than symlinking, but you could think of it similarly. But effectively, if you have two projects that need Flask or need requests, we'll have a single version of that that we stored in the cache. And then when we install it into those projects, we can kind of just link it in instead of copying over all the artifacts or re-downloading it or anything like that. So this is good for a bunch of reasons. So one, it's really, really fast, because like creating those symlinks is just much, much faster than like copying the project multiple times or other work that you might have to do. The other is that it's like a lot more space efficient, because you no longer have to store like a separate copy of requests in like every project that you have. You're basically storing one copy and then linking to it from all the projects that need it. So those are the primary benefits, really. It's like it's speed and disk space efficiency.
So it's making my virtual environments more lightweight than is also, right?
It should be much more lightweight. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it's interesting, because I think these are things that I've talked to some PIP maintainers, and I think these are things that PIP is interested in doing in general. And there's like some other package managers and other ecosystems that do some similar things, like in the JavaScript ecosystem, there are package managers that kind of operate with a similar approach, and that's where some of the inspiration came from. But like one cool thing could be, the fact that we shipped this approach to caching, we might kind of like normalize that a little bit for users. and the fact that we had to solve some of the technical problems associated with it could actually make it easier for PIP to ship a similar thing in the future, which I think would be a cool outcome, because, I want everyone to use UV, of course, but like PIP is also a foundational project in the ecosystem and used by, I would assume, millions and millions of people. It's interesting to me to think about how are things that we've done, how can they be backported, or how can they change the status quo a little bit and enable PIP to pull some of them in too.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, UV, where did the name come from?
Well, it stands for ultraviolet.
Okay.
And we wanted something.
It's not after that movie, is it?
No, I don't. What movie?
Okay.
Maybe I didn't do my research. No, it's not.
Okay.
We liked it. We wanted something really short. Like, this is also something I thought about a lot with Ruff. Like, we're building tools whose names people are typing a lot. And so, like, Ruff, I mean, I actually don't know if I have good typing form, but like, when I type Ruff, I only need to use my two index fingers. And it's just really easy to type. It's very easy to come up with cool names that are actually kind of a pain to type. But I do think about stuff like that when I'm choosing the name. I'm like, how nice does it feel to type? Because like, people are going to be typing this. If it's successful, people will be typing it over and over and over. So like, I liked UV because it's extremely short and it's right next to the home row, right? So it's very easy to type.
Also index fingers.
Yeah, it's also index fingers. So I wanted something that was short, easy to type, and distinctive. And I also kind of wanted, you know, we also wanted something that felt more attached to the Astral brand, because Ruff predated Astral. So the name Ruff, it doesn't really, there's no like thematic consistency between like Ruff and the company name Astral. But with UV, there's at least like some kind of tie-ins between like ultraviolet and like Astral, at least like if you kind of squint vaguely. So I wanted there to be something. I wanted there to be something that felt a little bit more cohesive.
So is Ruff an abbreviation? Is it like Rust Fast Formatter or something?
No, it doesn't really mean anything. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's more like I looked at a bunch of words and I was like, what's a word that I could make here? And I was like, Ruff, like Rust, like, anyway, I don't know. So yeah, the Ruff doesn't mean anything. No. And I kind of liked that it was like a pun, like it's a rough draft. That was like something that I was like kind of saying to myself at the time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I had some jokes about that in the early days, but I kind of moved on from them.
But, well, so yeah. UV, so one of the things that surprised me, there's a lot of things that surprised me about UV so far. And both in a good way, nothing negative. It's just either neutral.
It's fine if it's negative, by the way.
I'm sure you've heard it, but, the amount of release, this is like a week old or something like that, or maybe two. It hasn't been around for very long.
Yeah, week and a half, I think. I think we did it. I think it was Thursday of like last week. Yeah.
Okay. So last week. Yeah.
Or not last week, the week before, right? Yeah.
There's been
a lot of releases.
Been like a whole bunch of releases, and which is cool. But is that, it's got to be a little bit hard to deal with, or are you just happy? How many core people? You got 8 people in your company. Is everybody working on this, or?
No. Okay. Well, so for the week after the release, we kind of opened the door to like, is anyone willing to come help us? Because we have like a lot of issues, or there's a lot of activity. So we had a couple extra people. In general, it's been kind of 4 of us working on UV.
Okay.
And the rest on Ruff and associated projects around Ruff, like our editor integrations and such. We've had a lot of releases that will definitely slow down. I mean, it's kind of like the early days of Ruff. Like the early days of Ruff were even worse for users. I think because sometimes I'd ship twice a day because like there was something someone wanted and I decided, why not just get it out? Like the thing right now is like, it's very energizing to have users because we developed this thing for a couple months in a private repo and like we did a bunch of testing and stuff, but like, it's just having users is very, very different because people, first of all, it's just energizing to see people actually trying your thing. And second of all, like if they try it and they run into an issue, it's probably actually like a very real bug that like we didn't know about, right? Or we didn't see. And so it's just very nice to be in the feedback loop of like, person's trying your project, they run into some problem, you fix it, and then they have a good experience because they try the new release and like the stuff is working. So like part of it is just energizing to like have users and be back in the form of in the mode of like shipping things just consistently. We'll definitely slow that down quite a bit once the project has stabilized.
Well, GitHub says that you have 48 contributors. So there's other people outside your company contributing it as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's in like a week too. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, because when we released, there were only probably 5 contributors, maybe 4 or 5. So Okay. Those are all new. Yeah.
But a week into it, you got 231 issues open. Is that stressful? Or are you just kind of used to
no,
it?
Because
Ruff's
no,
got
kind
like
of used to it.
681. Not to like.
You know. No, it's fine. Having lots of issues isn't necessarily bad. I mean, issues means people are using it, right?
Okay.
So if we had fewer issues than we received, I think I would be worried that people weren't really using it. At least is how I think about it. But I think I'm not that stressed about it because most of them we know what bit of work is pretty well known. Like we kind of know what we need to do and it's just a matter of grinding through a lot of it. We closed like, I think over 200 issues, like over the course of the week, over the course of the first week. Now I think it's at 150 something because it's a rolling tally, but like, we close a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there's 544 closed issues right now. That's
yeah, like I guess the week after the release, I guess it was stressful. There was definitely like a lot of things we wanted to fix, and so we were basically trying to just fix them quickly. And
so the two things that like trip me up is the virtual env using the prompt dot not working right. And that was fixed.
I think we fixed that. Yeah,
you fixed it even before I noticed it. It just wasn't.
I didn't fix that. Someone else did. Okay. But yeah, I think it was fixed quickly.
And then, pip list, which I didn't even know pip. I'm just not normally using pip freeze, so I used pip list instead. So pip freeze worked right away. Pip list
now is out. I think.
Yeah, just like
as of
like
today.
A few hours ago.
Yeah. That was a contributor did that. Yeah. Yeah. So we're fixing. Yeah. I do want the project to feel like, you know, when we ship something like we worked on it very hard, obviously, but like it's still kind of like the beginning of the project, like not the end. Right. So like we ship something like there's a bunch of bugs and like, but I want the feeling of like the product should just be compoundingly getting like better and better and more stable. Right. Like every time we close an issue and fix a bug, like that's just making the project like better and stronger. So that's really been the focus for the past week. It's just been on like correctness and fixing issues.
Some of the questions around it though is because Ruff is new. Like that's a new name. People aren't expecting it to be anything. Since UV uses UV pip and UV VENV, and does it use? I don't use pip tools every day. I don't know what the UV command for pip tools is.
We just use UV pip compile, UV space pip space compile. Yeah.
But because you're using that, I think a lot of people are expecting their favorite corner feature to work. That wasn't the goal right away. And is it even the goal? And you're not trying to be 100% compatible, are you?
No, we're not trying to be 100% compatible. But we are trying to be like largely compatible. Like the intention there, and we've gotten a lot of feedback around this in both the positive and constructive. Like some people think it makes a ton of sense and really like it. Some people think it's confusing and don't like it. And we're kind of trying to figure out like how we feel about it. But the intention of using pip as the subcommand was really to give an immediate sense for like what the CLI looks like and like what commands are supposed to be supported and how people are supposed to use it. Like if we had our own UV install command, like maybe we'll add that eventually, but like then that could kind of do like almost anything. Like Poetry has like a Poetry install command, and like that's really different than like pip's pip install command. Like those just operate with very different semantics and mean very different things. And so the intention there was just to try and like immediately convey like, okay, if you run like UV pip install like requests, it installs requests into the current virtual environment. And like, that's something that I was hoping would be like immediately conveyed by the subcommand. The goal is not to support like every single flag of pip, for example. Although we do support a good number of them, but like, we're not going to support all of them. And I don't think we'll support every subcommand. The goal is more to kind of convey like, what's the scope of the interface and like, how does it generally work? Okay. And so that's why we did that. But yeah, it doesn't use pip under the hood or VM under the hood or anything like that, which I guess is another source of potential confusion.
But one of the things that, so I was watching the pip list thread a little bit, and one of the comments that you had was, are people using pip list programmatically? Does the output need to be the same, yeah, or can it just, yeah, yeah, can it be something?
But you were really watching the thread. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know what the result was. Did you decide?
We did the same thing. Yeah, we did the same thing.
You know, ASCII compatible.
Same thing as, yeah, we did the same thing as pip. Yeah.
Okay. Because some people probably do put it into tool chains or something.
Yeah. And I think I didn't have like a strong reason to deviate from it, but like part of the reason that we did this, by the way, instead of having UV install, right, we have like UV pip install. Like the main reason that we did that is because we want to add commands in the future that will probably be at the top level. So yeah, like we might add a UV install in the future, but if we add that, it'll work really differently than pip install. And so we want to like retain space basically at the top level to add this more opinionated workflow in the future. So we kind of scoped everything beneath these subcommands, which means we don't have to like break them in the future. If we add our own UV install, we'll still have those commands available. So that was another part of the motivation for that.
And I have seen some blowback, at least from the sidelines, of some people, like you said, some people saying, well, maybe you should have not used the word pip.
Yeah.
It should have been something else. But then there's also, is it even fair for a venture-backed company to be taking over these projects? I've got my own opinions about that. But before I say anything, have you thought about that? Is that a consideration?
Well, I think I would maybe object to the idea that we're like taking over pip, if that's maybe what's being suggested there, because like in my view, I think
perhaps maybe at least taking some of since there's UV there, and if somebody wants to contribute to a project, they might want to consider contributing to UV rather than contributing to pip, or just say, I don't need to contribute it because they got money they can pay for.
Well, what I want is like, I want there to be, and I really think there can be, like a symbiotic relationship between like our projects and obviously and other open source projects, even if they are sometimes seen as like competing or like substitutable. So like, for example, like it's similar with Ruff and Pylint. Like we have a good relationship with like the Pylint project, and like we sponsor one of the maintainers, for example, and like part of, and you know, if we need to make changes like to our Pylint rules, we'll often like talk to them about it, or like if they're going to add rules to Pylint, like there's often dialogue between the tools. And like from my perspective, you know, part of the reason for that is like, first of all, there's a lot of people who use Pylint and a lot of people who use Ruff like use it alongside Pylint. And so I want there to be like a healthy ecosystem of tools and in tooling. And so like our goal is not to like completely replace Pylint necessarily, because like there's just a lot of projects that are going to keep using Pylint and that are using Pylint. And so I want to have like a good ecosystem between these projects, because I see them as somewhat symbiotic. And it's similar with pip. Like another thing that we can do is we can bring, you know, because we're kind of like a newer project and we don't have to think as hard about like pip and UV, like we have a lot of overlapping goals, but also a lot of like very different goals. Like pip has to be like totally rock solid. Like pip's primary goal is it needs to be like extremely stable. And I shouldn't speak for the project, but my impression of the project and from talking to maintainers is like, you know, the primary goal there is it needs to be like rock solid and reliable. And it needs to work even for very old things. Often it needs to work. For us, like we don't have to, we can make different trade-offs. Like there are things we can choose to support and we're just in a different position around it. And so we can kind of like experiment with things, and maybe that even funnels back into pip, but we can also bring like different perspectives to a lot of the packaging discourse. Like I actually think it's a good thing if the Python ecosystem has multiple like viable package installers that are centered on a set of shared standards. Like, I think that's actually a really healthy thing for the ecosystem. So like, I don't know, at least from my perspective, in a very genuine way, like I want there to be a symbiotic relationship between the work that we're doing and, you know, the other projects in the Python ecosystem. And similarly, this is not something that I've done a good job of like so far, but I think it is actually really important for us, which is that we need to make sure that our project is not tied to the success of the company, right? Because and there are lots of other open source projects that do a very good job of this, but the idea of having a governance model and such that exists outside of the company and that could thrive even if the company doesn't, that's also something I think about quite a bit. So I don't know. I think I'm answering your question, but I'm kind of going about it by kind of conveying at least how I view like that relationship. I hope that it will be nothing but a good thing for the Python ecosystem to have, you know, more tools like this and more people that can spend time on them. But I totally understand that it's not, that it does create, you know, it could create tension. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so far the, interactions that I've seen through GitHub issues and I guess posts on Mastodon even, have been like you and other people involved in the project in Astral seem to be respectful to the people that are already in the community. And I have no evidence otherwise to doubt you. So, so far you seem like good citizens.
I appreciate it. Well, I appreciate that that's your impression, because it's certainly how I feel. I mean, like Pip is like, I don't know, at least in my opinion, at least like pretty incredible project. Like, and I have a lot of respect for the people that have like maintained it and worked on it. And like, that's basically my perspective on it, right? I'm not here to say like that project is bad or something and ours better. It's just like, they're just different projects. And like, I think it's like a good thing for the Python ecosystem to have multiple installers that are viable and built around a set of shared standards. And I actually think that the people who work on Pip would agree with that. But yeah, I guess one thing I would say like to this point more broadly is like, I do generally feel like, I think it's very possible for like someone like me, for example, or like a company, right, to like come in and like build a bunch of stuff in Python and like do things in a way that is like not like respectful to the community and not like integrated in a genuine way like with the community. And like, first of all, I don't want to be that, and I also don't feel that way. And I'm also really grateful, because I think the Python community by and large has been extremely welcoming. Like, yeah. I feel I don't know, that's just how I've felt. Like I said, I didn't really know anyone in this community like a year and a half ago, and I've just felt a lot of positivity and respect and like good intentions from like pretty much all the interactions I have. So I feel very fortunate that that's the case, because I also think there's a world in which we came in and people were really angry and hostile about it, and just not at all what I've experienced. So I don't know. I feel lucky about, I mean, not everyone is nice, but like, you know, by and large, like almost everyone is very nice and welcome. So I am glad that that's the dynamic that we have. It's, you know, it's important that we, you know, we comport ourselves in the same way.
Cool. What's next
for Astral? Oh man. I mean, like, focus right now is just on fixing as many issues as possible. That's the focus.
There's going to be more tools that you're going to take over in the, we'll probably see another something out of you in the, at least
there's other things we want to do. Yeah. I mean, I think from here, like, I want the UV roadmap to be, very public. Like, I'm sure we'll do projects again in the future where they're private for a few months and then we like drop them or whatever. But like, it is not my preferred way of working. I think there are good reasons to do that, but like I would prefer that our roadmap for UV at least is now like kind of more public, and that we can kind of sketch it out in public and also get feedback on it in public. Like those are all really good things. I think the thing that we want to do next, for UV at least, or probably the thing we will do next, excuse me, is we want to add support for bootstrapping and managing your Python versions. So if you've used something like PyEnv before,
I've tried.
Or if you use like Homebrew for this, right? Like there's a lot of different ways to manage, like how do you quote unquote, how do you install Python? Like Conda is also an answer to that question. There's a lot of different ways to install Python, but I would like UV to be capable of installing Python for you, and in particular Python across different versions. So you could imagine that you just download UV and then you run UV pip install on your project, and it says, and it actually downloads and installs Python and then downloads all the dependencies. And so you didn't have to worry about how do I get Python installed or do I have the right Python version. I want UV to be capable of managing that too. So that's probably the next like big feature I would think that we'll start working on. But it won't be this week. and then on the rough side, there's a couple. The things I choose to share and don't share, it's always about managing expectations, I think, because like some of the things that we want to do is just going to take a long time, and I don't want people to say like, oh, they're going to do X. But I think, you know, one thing that I do want to do on the rough side is we want to be investing more in our editor integrations. We have like a language server that powers our VS Code extension. And we think there's a bunch of interesting things we can do if we basically, that language server is written in Python, but for a variety of reasons, we want to rewrite it in Rust and make it part of Ruff itself. Because right now it's like a separate thing that kind of calls Ruff. But if it was built into Ruff, there's just a bunch of interesting stuff we could do around persistent state, like in the server, like making it more robust, making it possible to do analysis across multiple files at once. So like investing more in the editor integrations was another big thing for this year.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I'm just, one of my to-do lists on this year is to try to investigate more of the options in Ruff, because it can do way more than it did a year ago. It keeps growing.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Well, thanks so much for your time, Charlie. We'll talk later.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you, PyCharm, for sponsoring this episode. Head to pythontest.com/PyCharm to see how easy it is to run PyTest in PyCharm. Then go to jetbrains.com/PyCharm and use code PyTest to get 20% off Pro. And for the first 10 this month, grab a free month of AI Assistant. If you want to learn PyTest, get better at PyTest, or just want to be the most efficient you can be at automated testing, head to courses.pythontest.com for the complete PyTest course. Thank you, Patreon supporters. You rock. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.